And now, we return to ICAST, the intelligent radio broadcast on NMB Live. Don't just sit there. Get up and give Norm a piece of your mind at area code 613-247-9573. Or email us at ICAST@nmbproductions.com. Here's your host, Norman Michael Burketta.
Lizette, welcome back to hour two of the program.
Thank you.
And I don't know about you, but I'm having a great time.
Me too.
You know, while reading this book, I have just this overwhelming feeling that I'm supposed to be reading the book. And I don't know if that's normal for a talk show host to actually be, you know, we're supposed to be impartial and just sort of, you know, say yes, and so on.
Yeah, most of you guys don't even read the books, right?
Well, I got to tell you, I did, and I've marked it up, and I want to get to that fairly soon. But, so we were speaking about the, again, we were on the craft with you, I think, when we last left off.
Right.
And
so we got through the fetus is in the jar issue safely, and there was some passage of time, and I then remember I came to awareness again, in which I was sitting in some type of an examination area, and I was having a conversation, a telepathic one at that, with one of the ETs, and at the time I had registered it as. In my memory, just so that other contactees understand how normal it is for this type of processing, when you're remembering or when ET contacts are emerging in your memory, it went back and forth between having part of the conversation with a human and then an ET. So sometimes the conscious mind needs to remember it as a human face. And even I've heard of people having dreams in which it's even a human face with large eyes. And so although I had this experience and I have active memories while I was there, I tried to get more details of it through hypnosis, but was not always successful.
Okay.
So in any case, I was in this examination area, and I remember a few things that happened. They took a clipping of my hair and explained that I was about to have an operation, a procedure, a surgical operation, and I had no fear whatsoever. I was fully understanding that it was something that I was participating in with my full cooperation. And some of the detail of that I don't recall, but enough of it I do, in which I understand that it was not only a process in which I would receive some type of implant in my head, but also that there were some healing modalities that were taking place for me. So, like many of us, they were addressing some of my own health issues and or physiological deficits. And at the time, I also received an implant. Now, that's another one of the controversial aspects of contact, and I'd like to just address that for a little bit.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Which, not only can this be very frightening for people who are opening to contact, I've had many emails from people who say they don't remember much, but they do know that they've received some kind of implant, whether it's in their arm or their nose or what have you, and it can feel very terrifying, and people even they'll go to dig them out with their bare fingernails because they're just terrified.
Okay.
And just to provide another context, you know, even on this planet, and we call it ecology, by the way, we have put into place certain systems and programs whereby we tag and track our endangered species. And so we put tags on our birds and we relocate our elephants to safer ground, and we even put little chips in the ears of our dogs so that if they're lost, we can find them.
Exactly.
So we understand in this paradigm that implants do not necessarily mean victimization. For example, we even go to our local physician and we can get ear devices to help us hear better, or heart, you know, things for our heart, pacemakers and such. All of it allowing us to better perform or better live out the stated destiny of the soul.
Yeah.
And so if you can take that paradigm and just expand on it a little bit, some of us have also decided that with the relationship that we're developing with our neighbors, these neighbors in particular, which have at their disposal greater technology and abilities, that some of us have decided that we wanted to be participating in this in implant program for whatever reason, whether it's because of a health deficit or what have you. Mm-hmm. And one of the questions that I asked later, after this first book was published, when I said, well, wait a minute, if you are, I'm asking the ETs, if you are evolved and enlightened, why do I need to have an implant so that you can find me? You should just be able to find me. I don't need to be tracked like a common seal or something.
Yeah.
And so although we use that analogy in the book to just help soften some of the assumptions that we have about such devices, in fact, it was explained to me that the device helps me locate them rather than them locate me.
Okay.
In any case, and I want to also quickly state that my understanding is no, implants or such devices are not necessary to initiate, maintain, or to maintain contact. It just depends on the individual plan of that particular individual. There can be health deficits related to it or whatever. There's a whole huge spectrum of reasons and possibilities for such things, just as there are, by the way, in this paradigm, with our animals and with ourselves. There's a broad spectrum of reasons for such procedures and devices. And so it's a very individual and personal thing, but does not necessarily suggest that someone has been victimized or violated.
Right, right. But then, of course, if people are laboring under the, let's call it the old way of thinking, then that's exactly how they would feel. And what you're saying is very alien to them. Right.
And, you know, just for a moment, let's just touch upon, you know, but I'm then asked, well, Lissette, are you suggesting that there's no such thing as a bad alien and that nobody's ever been victimized? And I just would want to say that my understanding is that on Earth, as it is in the universe, there is the all of it. There's all of the experience. As great as our imagination is, there is every type of being from one spectrum to the other.
Right.
So one does not preclude the other. But I do understand that where we look is where we go. What we focus upon is what we draw to ourselves. Like energy does attract like energy, and so oftentimes if we're convinced, for instance, on this planet, if we're convinced that life is tortuous, if life is meaningless, if there's no real reason for it, that it's a chaotic and disordered world, oftentimes our experience is just that. If we tend to want to shift our beliefs and our viewpoint, and we become determined to practice viewing life as a grand spiritual adventure, and that if we step outside of the illusion of our cultural voice, that in fact we understand if everything is possible, and if quantum physics has already identified and proven that like attracts like, for instance, then in fact we recognize that we are responsible, we are at cause in the matter, and that what we are really putting forth is we are drawing to us.
Yeah.
And so it becomes a matter of, I don't need to prove, I have no reason to prove or insist that all aliens are good or bad. It's all out there, and you can draw to you what you choose.
Yeah.
And so just as I have several neighbors on my street, and some of them are wonderfully loving and helpful, and I love relating to them, there are also some grumpy, there's somebody down the street who is a downright bully. But I found that the best way to approach all of the events and circumstances of my life is to send out loving energy. And I find that the same usually comes back to me. So I find myself more and more surrounded by the types of people and the types of beings and events and circumstances that most match what I'm putting out.
Right, right. Yeah. And that, again, that makes a lot of sense to me. You know, and this is something, like I said before, when I'm reading the book, a lot of these things just made sense.
It's funny because some of this stuff, I mean, we've, you know, quantum physicists, for example, have proven ages ago that the experimenter can impact the results of the experiment just by virtue of the ideas and thoughts held by the experimenter, which suggests, of course, which proves that we are impacting our results by how we are approaching the circumstances of our life. And so certainly I'm convinced that if you want to prove that this is a horrible world and that no one can be trusted, that you can't buy a used car unless you're, you know, taken to the cleaners, you can prove that to yourself, I guarantee it.
Yeah.
But if you instead, in this same example, approach the used car lot feeling that there are people out there, there are used car salesmen who have integrity and who have families and who approach their own lives from a spiritual standpoint, you can find that one used car salesperson, even if there is only one in your town, and that's exactly what you can cause to yourself. And, of course, that example, just expand on that, and it's the same with your otherworldly experience.
Yeah. Where are you up to date now? If we were to talk about today, you are still interviewing them, correct?
Yes. What happened is my face to I was having for a while these face to face experiences, these contacts.
Okay.
And then they shifted, and now I am becoming more comfortable and learning to continue my contact and communications, but within the comfort of my own home. Now I am learning and adjusting to not only the idea, but also the reality of recognizing that just as I am right now with you, Norm, having a conversation with a device in my hand, you know, called a telephone, and we can communicate, and it is very real. I'm hearing you, and in some cases we can even record this conversation. That is also possible through to continue this same type of thing with others in the universe. It's just a matter of believing that it's so and developing those abilities. So if you brought in somebody who had, you know, been locked away or closed up and for ages and had never heard of a telephone, you know, your great-great-grandmother might find this extraordinary. And so it's the same kind of a thing. Once we recognize that it's possible, we can actually take certain steps to develop our own ability to contact and communicate with others who would be happy to relate to us if we just invite that contact.
Right. And if I may add as well, what I found from my own experience is when you allow yourself the when you allow yourself to open yourself to the possibility that yes, you can do something, doors as well open that you probably didn't even know existed before. When you follow a certain path and say yes, I can do this, and now the question is how, doors don't just open, they fly open.
Yes, particularly if it's something that the soul is encouraging one to do. And usually, if there's a deep interest, if there's curiosity and intrigue, it's a really good sign that, in fact, the soul is, through the characteristics of intrigue, curiosity, for example, are leading you down the path so that you can experience more of who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And really that's all we're doing, because as spiritual beings living a human experience, really it's just about becoming aware of what we already are. It's not that we're that we weren't it before. We were it before. We're just remembering that we are. And so as we recognize that we're spiritual beings, participants in this grand experience of universal life, that there's so much life out there, that in fact even our scientists have proven that there are not millions but billions of galaxies, not billions of planets but billions of galaxies out
yeah.
there
yeah.
Then we can begin to wonder, gee, do you think there's anybody else out there? And if so, can we know them? And the fun really begins when we recognize that we don't need NASA to find them. We don't need our governments to give us permission to go before us and tell us how to do it or what we can experience. In fact, individuals all over the world are leading the way. We will lead our governments. We will show them, not out of power or out of might, but rather through our own experiences, we will show our governments what is possible when we drop the ideas that through our technology can we experience another. In fact, just because of our spiritual heritage, we can know another, because we're all family.
Yes. And I found that quite awesome as I was reading, because that's actually toward the end of the book, where they talked about that, all the money that NASA's spending and all the technology that they've got and all these, you know, the arrays of telescopes and everything.
Right.
And really they're searching and they're sitting there and you can just see it's like a taxi meter, right? Just going and going. and what have they produced? And yet, you know, we're getting right back to the basics, right back to a spiritual connection.
Exactly.
And that's what's working.
This is why it does not need to be a difficult process. In fact, I feel, and I feel very certain of this, that I had chosen the circumstances of my life. The opening to contact was very difficult for me, but not by accident. In fact, I wanted to come before a certain group, just as others came before me, by the way, but I wanted to come before, and so that I could offer hope and encouragement to you and to another, and to say, this is possible. You can even circumvent many of the pitfalls that I went through, and in fact learn to know your neighbor without going through all the drama that I did.
Yeah.
It's just as easy as taking a step and trusting and taking another step and noticing that the steps become easier and easier. So yes, it is definitely an individual awakening, and eventually when enough of us do, of course, then we participate in this mass consciousness shift, and the whole lot of us then can in fact experience other beings, and in a more demonstrative way.
Right.
Till that happens, till we're ready as a mass group of us, it will be, I think these experiences will be relegated to individual experiences. For example, you know, we so often ask, you know, when are they going to come? When will they land here on a group, you know, for a group of us to see, so that it will be televised? And they respond by saying, we cannot tell you when you will have us for tea, for you are half of the equation. When you insist that you are not, you disallow what is so. And it just comes back again and again to the fact that we are co-creating our experiences. And so when we want to shut ourselves off from knowing other beings, we can do that. We just, by our decision, it is done. And conversely, when we choose to open ourselves up to more possibility, that too is just a decision and can change our daily paradigm completely.
Yeah. Fascinating stuff. Let's take a break now, because what I want to do is when we come back, I want to tell you, because I have had some experiences in the past, many, many years ago, okay?
Uh-huh.
There's one in particular that I've not really told very, very many people about. But it was one that I thought I would share with you.
Okay, great.
All right. So, again, off to the green room you go.
Okay.
And when we come back, we will spend the final half hour with Lizette Larkins, author of Talking to Extraterrestrials. We're going to listen to a little bit, just another song from Alan Parsons Project. And when we come back, we'll finish off with Lizette and have a wonderful rest of the program. Stick around.
You are listening to ICAST, the intelligent radio broadcast on NMB Live. Don't just sit there. Get up and give us a call at area code 613-247-9573 or email us at ICAST@NMBProductions.com. We'll return to the program after this.
I'm
return to ICAST, the intelligent radio broadcast on NMD Live. Don't just sit there. Get up and give Norm a piece of your mind at area code 613-247-9573. Or email us at ICAST@NMDProductions.com. Here's your host, Norman Michael Byrd-Heaven.
If you're just joining us, you're late. You should have been here an hour and a half ago, but we're not going to fault you for that.
My guest tonight is Lizette Larkins, author of Talking to Extraterrestrials, and a phenomenal story, absolutely phenomenal. And I am about to do something here. Lizette, you're still with us?
I am.
Awesome, okay. I have been waiting for this interview for a couple of months now, okay?
Okay.
It's everything I thought it would be, and I'm so glad that you could spare the time to be with us. I want to relate to you an incident, one of a few. I'm going to try and do it as quickly as I can, not to take up your time.
You can take my time.
Okay. All right. This will be my session with you. When about shortly after I was married, this is about 15 years ago, I had a situation where. There was one night my wife and I were sitting boldly upright in bed. We were on the fourth floor of an apartment building where there were two other buildings, and we were just kind of looking out the window because we had just heard this thing, whatever it was, and we saw some lights. Okay? In the morning, I had totally forgotten about it, but when my wife woke up, she said, "Hey, do you remember that thing we saw last night?" Now, I don't have any other memories about that other than what I just told you. On or about that period of time, because there seemed to be a few things that happened around that time, I had a dream. And the dream was that I was lying down on a table, and I was surrounded by about four doctors. This is what I remember. There were, I think, three doctors on my right side and one on the left, and the one on the left was inserting a... the best way I can describe it was it appeared to me to be a miniature soup ladle, okay? As crazy as that sounds,
right.
He was inserting that into the front of my shin and pulling out what my mind said was spaghetti sauce, okay? This is what I was thinking in the dream. Like, I must have been sitting and thinking, oh, that's spaghetti sauce. Now, I didn't feel any pain. I didn't feel stressed. I kind of felt like... Yeah, okay, I'm here, and this is happening. But here's the kicker. The next day or a few days after, I'm not sure, I was in the bath getting ready for work, and my wife was in the bathroom just, you know, doing her hair or whatever, and she looked over, and she said, "What's that on your leg?" And I said, "What's what?" And she said, "Well, you have a spot there where there's no hair." And sure enough, on my left shin, on the front of my leg, and it's still there today, there is a circle, it looks like a scar, like scar tissue. It's light, it won't tan, it's about the size of a dime, I'd say about three quarters the size of a dime, no hair grows on it whatsoever. Okay?
Right.
So, I don't know what to make of that. As far as I know, I have not had anything happen since then, and that's been about, I'd guess, maybe between 12 to 14 years ago.
You know, what you've described is such a common, almost an intangible, you can't quite get your hand around it, can't quite get a hold of it, but a memory, a fragmented dream, a partial remembering, and then even something that shows up in your worldly life, such as an actual scar.
Yeah.
And then somebody even noticing that, such as your wife, which, you know, the thinking person has to ask, is something going on? Is something happening? And from my understanding, usually when we ask, usually when there is some kind of phenomena or experience or encounter, doesn't seem to be explainable, that in fact returns to our mind again and again and again and again without resolution, it usually is a good indication that in fact life.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden, it's not something that happened to you, but that you called to yourself, and in fact is precisely why I would suspect you have such an interest in this phenomenon, because a very deep part of yourself recognizes that you too have had contact, that you too have family members elsewhere, and you have not only met them, but you remember them, although, granted, the mind, just like I was explaining earlier, in my own experience, we sometimes remember the faces of the ETs is different, is even human.
Right.
That it doesn't jive with what we understand about the phenomenology of UFO experience. So when, to me, you are at a critical point right now, critical, not dangerous critical,
right,
but critical meaning significant, because when we bring ourselves to this place where we say, wow, you know, and there's so many people who have a story like that and they've never told anybody. They have a, there's just one little snippet, just one thing that happened, two things, and it seems so minor, and they wonder, am I just trying to, you know, am I just making this up, or, you know, I've been reading too many science fiction books. But from what I hear, from what I know of my own experience, and I have received so many thousands, I mean, it's just after, say, Art Bell and the Whitley Strieber Show, I received almost 45,000 visits to my website.
Yeah.
And I only say that because I say over and over again that millions of us worldwide, and in fact that's what the ETs are telling me, that millions and millions of people are opening consciously to the contact that they've had in their past, that they are presently having, or are about ready to have or continue. So, getting back to what I was saying, this crossroads, this juncture in which you even yourself represent, I think, many people's experience in which something happened once and now you're at the crossroads, having taken perhaps even a break from the experiences, you can now decide if you'd like to expand on that contact and know more.
Yeah.
Not only bring back and unearth more of those memories from the past experience, but even to then call it to yourself very purposefully, recognizing that it's part of a grand spiritual awakening and that you'd like to, in fact, expand on that very contact. And fear, of course, is the great inhibitor.
Yes. Yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
Right. And so when we recognize the role that fear has played in our traumatic forgetting or our traumatic amnesia, and when we just allow ourselves to consider that because we felt fear, because our memory has been impaired, it does not necessarily indicate that something bad happened, but that within the context of our culture, that's all we could cope with. That's what we had to do with it.
Yeah.
But now, the fact that we're discussing this, the fact that you're discussing this, the fact that one is reading about a different way to think about something, it's a good hint that the soul is asking and calling on oneself to go to the next step. And this is what so many of us are doing, and it's such an exciting time, because imagine as a species in, you know, 50 or 100 years, looking back on us, which of course is, as I understand it, which is exactly what is going to happen.
Right.
Those of us, those of we humans who have opened to contact and will show the rest of us how it's done by our own example, by saying, it's okay, there's nothing to fear. These beings, these other life forms, these other beings, these entities, they do look different from us. They do, in some ways, behave differently from us, but we don't need to fear them. And we haven't had much experience. We haven't had very much good experience, positive experience, in relating to each other if we even look differently. Look at the Civil Rights Movement, which is just yesterday, if you know, along the timeline of human experience. It was just a second ago, and we had a hard time embracing other humans who look differently,
yeah,
who may have different cultural customs, behave differently in some respects, just ethnic differences. And by golly, we are also challenged to notice that we drop those fears, we are instead left with an awe, and we can invite knowing our other neighbors, though diverse from us, but it doesn't have to be frightening.
Yeah. You know, to be honest with you as well, I've also had, you know, a day of missing time back when I was younger.
Yeah.
Different things like that. Ongoing, there's been little things, but nothing in the last 14 years, let's say.
Right.
But I've never been afraid of it, and I've always kind of thought it was kind of neat that I may have had a connection somewhere. But I've never actually been, even that whole being on the table thing and having that thing in my leg. I never thought of that as being, you know, kidnapped and experimented with, it, because to the best of my recollection, it was just kind of like matter of fact. There I was, you know, this is happening. Okay, whatever.
Well, you're one step ahead of the game.
Because I'm not. Yeah, yeah.
And then the next step is also to, you know, almost actively allow that. Not only did you not feel fear, but you now want to remember more actively what is happening.
Yeah. Now, on a lighter side,
yes.
You have been through, in contacting the extraterrestrials, you've been through a few appliances and stuff. Can you touch on that for a second?
Oh, yeah. Well, there's something crazy that happens when we open to other realms. And I'm not a scientist, and I don't even have a scientific mind, but from what I'm told, in the simplest language possible, is that other realms have a different frequency. There's a different electromagnetic, among other things, vibration and feel to those realms. And so when the two collide, so to speak, when the two come in contact, some of those mechanisms from our realm go crazy. And so, yes, there is definitely a commonality amongst contactees in which appliances, everyday appliances after contact, whether it's, and in my case, tape recorders or the toaster, early on with my contact, when it first started, I would just walk by a light and the bulb would blow out, or it would even go turn on and off. The telephone answering machine was constantly replaying itself on its own. It was just an electrical nightmare.
Yeah.
And in those days, in the old days, that just furthered my suspicion and my fear that, oh, you know, am I even imagining this, that there's some, that somehow my very presence is impacting appliances. So I even mistrusted that. Nowadays, I understand it's very common. And it's just one of the side effects, if you will, of having a different frequency. And they explain it even, we can even feel that kind of strong charge when we have our own clothes in the clothes dryer and you take it out and you separate the socks.
And zap.
This yeah. crackling. Well, that kind of energetic charge, not only do I feel in my scalp when I'm communicating and I bring through this information, it feels as though someone's peeling back my scalp. There's this crackly, very loud. It's so hard to believe that no one can hear it who's sitting next to me. But that same kind of thing then impacts often the appliances around us. For years, I had car windows in my car that would go up and down even when the motor was turned off. And crazy things like that.
And I think at the time that you wrote this book, you had said in here that you'd been through, I think, two of your son's computers.
Yes. And yes, it's kind of now a family joke.
Okay, well, see, this is going to sound like a really silly and materialistic kind of a comment. I hope it doesn't, but I'm sure it will. But for me, my computer is, I broadcast with my computer. I do I've got all kinds of audio. I do for clients. I make films. I do all that stuff with
right.
my computer. So a part of me says, and when I read that, I was thinking, oh, gee, if I invite this kind of connection, I'm liable to be out of business for a while. and I know that's materialistic, but how, I mean, does one have to, I mean, does this energy stay with you always or just when you're speaking with them or about to?
Well, no, I found that it surrounds the times of the contact. And so, it kind of ebbs and flows. And, you know, it's an interesting dilemma because my suggestion is there are things that you can do, one of which is to be caused to know how you can keep your livelihood from, you know, how you keep the machine of your livelihood safe and intact.
Yeah.
And so
I guess I have to get into a car and drive out in the middle of nowhere and get away from my computers.
That's a very interesting question, boy.
Yeah, because I don't know. Maybe that's just me, but I was thinking I'd like to, but then I'm terrified that, you know, it's a crazy thing to think about. But
right. Well, it's funny because as you may recall in the book, I joke about contactees have no business house sitting.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Because you create havoc on everybody's stuff.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to give that one some thought.
Okay.
That's an interesting one. But I also would suggest that wherever the block is, then don't be surprised when 4 months, if you're, and I don't know if I mentioned, but I'm working presently on a book called, my next book, which is due to be released next May, which is about actively and proactively calling on extraterrestrials, and it's about 11 steps to inviting your own UFO encounter. And I'm bringing through an 11-step process to help actually proactively invite the encounter.
Excellent.
And I guess where I'm going with this is that wherever a block might be, wherever, and I wouldn't call this a fear with a capital F, but it's a concern, those kinds of things can act, you know, obviously can inhibit and impact the quality and quantity of our contact.
Yeah.
So if you can even imagine, if there's some holdout for having a loving relationship, if you're convinced that, well, if you have, you know, if you have this kind of relationship, then it will create some kind of a negative outcome. You know, don't be surprised that doesn't show up somehow in the lack of quantity, I might say,
yeah,
in your very experiences. So I would definitely challenge you to find resolution with this issue.
Yeah.
And the answers are always there for us when we have an issue and we have a problem. I think even that quandary has an answer and a resolution.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure it does, yeah. And only because, you know, because I just don't do games on this thing. This is my livelihood.
Yeah.
So it does,
really
is something.
That.
Yeah.
And, you know, it can even be something as simple as making a statement to the cosmos. Look, you know, I'd like to have contact, but let's keep it out of that room.
Yeah.
Or
don't touch my computer.
Right. You know,
yeah,
even as simple,
yeah,
as that, just keep out of that room when you're having contact. And after contact, I don't know, wash your hands. Or I'm just kidding. You know, I don't know how you decompress. Or, you know, as you may recall in the book, they had even teased me to go ahead and put it in the refrigerator overnight.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought they were kidding. I said, put the gateway in the refrigerator? Because, of course, the computers kept acting up.
Yeah.
And I thought that was interesting. That, I don't think that's very practical.
Yeah. Lizette, we've only got a few minutes left. Believe it or not, this went by so quickly. I want to read some of the things I highlighted in your book.
Okay.
Because these are some things that just made me realize. Here's a big one. This is from the Who We Are and Why We Are Here chapter. And I quote, did you think, they're talking to you here, did you think that you would evolve over eons and still be carrying weapons around in space? Are you thinking that we have burglar alarms upon our flying craft? This is our universe as much as it is yours, and if someone would insist on taking our craft from us before they could take it, we would cause them to have it. And it's funny, but what jumped out at me was this realization that, yeah, we are, at this point in time, so protective of our stuff,
right,
that we're just not ready, maybe, for this kind of space travel, because we would have the thing burglar. We'd have it, you know, of the club. I don't know how many of them you'd have to have, and all these other things. But it just occurred to me that, you know, something, that's absolutely right.
Yes, and it helps us recognize that we assume that our life here has to be our life there.
Yeah, because it's all the universe.
Right. And that's one of our challenges, is keep our warring mentality out of our encounters.
I'm sorry, I'm listening to you, and I'm going through the book the same thing.
Go ahead.
Here's another quote from Magic and Miracles, and this is something I wanted to share with you. It is a good sign in some respects that globally you are looking at and considering the idea of a more unlimited human vessel, one free of disease and one physically enhanced. What is positive is that you are all looking to the idea that there is more, so much more, of which you are capable physically, yet in many ways you are going about it in a limited way, for you are developing this from the mindset of a species that looks to solve its problems from the same thinking that has created them.
Right.
And this is cool because I believe it was Albert Einstein that said man cannot solve his problems on the same level at which they were created.
Right. And of course they're referring to the whole issue of cloning.
Yeah.
And how we want to create the perfect human being, but
right,
still have it, you know, release it to an environment that's polluted and full of catastrophe.
But I guess what jumped out at me, though, Lizette, from that quote, was that, and here's a thought, I don't know, you know, they're in all through this book they speak about if you open yourself to the possibility that you have been divinely guided.
Right.
With your inspiration, with your thoughts and your ideas.
Right.
It occurred to me that if Albert Einstein, who was, you know, a brilliant man, maybe just the idea that maybe he also knew them as well.
They actually intimate that in the early chapters in which they say, who is to say that, I think they used examples of
Einstein
and Edison,
yes,
and even I think they said Beethoven, which is, who is to say that they have not been inspired by otherworldly contact?
Uh-huh.
So we don't know of what others have experienced, and so allow the Einstein within self to emerge by allowing each of us to find a safe haven in which to come forth.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's amazing. It asks it. Here's another one. A person does not buy a $1 million house because she has $1 million, although that appears to be the case. Behind the scenes is another story, and this is what we are asking you to observe. Behind the scenes of that story is that in some manner, that home was envisioned, that lifestyle was envisioned prior to the availability of funds, and then the funds manifested, and then the house was purchased.
Right.
I love that.
I know. I like that one too.
That is, I think they were. We were speaking about the visualization there, and in order to, because you were asking them, often I guess, you know, how do we take our planet now the way we are, and how do we change things around? How do we save our oceans? How do we, you know, feed the homeless? I mean, take care of them. How do we eliminate those problems?
Right.
And like they said, well, first you have to visualize that it can be done.
Right.
And
exactly.
And visualization is something that I've learned over only the last few years of my life. I've learned how important it is.
Yes.
So again, that was just to, I don't know, the whole, you know, wisdom, like I mentioned at the beginning of the show, that this book is just filled with it.
And so much of it is simple. You know, it's not,
yeah,
stuff that we have never heard before. But what's interesting is that it's being applied to relationships with universal, the other universal beings, which is sometimes new for us to consider.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to give you one more. this was interesting. It was on animals and cattle mutilations.
Right.
I'll read this little thing here. The cattle mutilations are just that. They are animals that have been targeted by certain individuals or groups in the galaxy for their own purposes. In addition, there are also individuals and groups of humans who target animals for ritualistic purposes. Neither, by the way, suggests that somehow this universe is unsafe. And I think that was answering the question of, well, what's going on if they're not, you know, out there, if you're not out there, what's the word, being
abducted?
Yeah.
Right.
And there's also something in here when you, it was in that same chapter talking about how we used to have a much different relationship with animals on this planet.
Right.
And that fascinated me.
Yes, that we we almost related to them as more as brothers and sisters,
yeah,
rather than as something to serve up for dinner.
Yeah, and they're very blunt in that conversation, you know?
Yes, exactly.
It's a phenomenal book, and you were right, by the way, about the drum roll. I won't let on what that's all about.
Oh, right.
Yeah. But, you know, Lizette, our time is up, and as you can tell, I'm losing my voice. I don't know, it's just late at night this happens to me.
Right.
But I do want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for coming tonight and joining us for the last 2 hours. As I hope you've had a good time.
Well, it's been my pleasure, and it's always an honor to be invited to speak about some ideas that that are oftentimes considered to be really controversial. So I really appreciate opening your show up to hearing those ideas.
Well, and I want you to promise that you'll come back.
Oh, I will.
And if you have
honored.
Oh, excellent. And if you have any updates, anything that new developments you want to share with us, it's just a phone call away.
Okay, and, great, Norm.
And if we don't hear from you sooner, I definitely want to have you back in May when you release your next book.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Lizette.
It's a pleasure.
We'll be in touch.
Okay,
bye-bye.